Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pair.com.
Welcome to Season 5 of The Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom, where we talk with enterprise and technology platform leaders about the people, processes, and platforms that make marketing and customer experience successful, scalable, and sustainable. This is what creates an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advisor and consultant for Fortune 1000 marketing and CX leaders and teams as principal and chief strategist at GK5A, and best-selling author, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, and Agile certified coach. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. To sign up for the Agile Brand newsletter and get the latest insights and articles on marketing technology and CX, or to purchase a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, go to gregkilstrom.com. You can also find all my books on Amazon and other retailers. And now on to the show. Today we're going to talk about the role of artificial intelligence in creative roles and creative work, and how they can work together, conflict, and all of the above. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Toby Barlow, co-founder and creative chief at Lafayette American. Toby, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this topic with you. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself as well as what you're currently doing at Lafayette American?
Yeah, so we're agency in Detroit. We're about 5 years old. Before that, I worked on a number of accounts, including Ford and some financial services. Worked in San Francisco, New York, and then moved to Detroit and fell in love with Detroit and decided to start an agency there.
Great. So we're going to talk about a topic that's top of mind. Everybody's on everybody's mind these days, still AI, artificial intelligence, still, lots of things to explore here. Lots of news continuing to be made with it. And I've had plenty of guests on the show talk about it from a marketing or a customer experience perspective, maybe a data perspective, but I thought it would be really interesting to explore it from a more creative standpoint. And so glad to have you on the show. And, as with anything, AI isn't all good, nor is it all bad. So let's explore both of these a little bit here. So, many people out there, whether in creative positions, marketing, customer service, or many other roles, have at least a little reason to be afraid of AI, right? AI has been around for decades, but what is different about things like ChatGPT, Midjourney, DALL-E, and the like?
I mean, the exponential change is pretty phenomenal. I mean, I think that's what's sort of freaking everybody out. Everyone sort of saw it percolating. They saw it off on the horizon, and then suddenly it was like right up close. And I think people feel the heat of the change, and they're kind of, it breeds anxiety. But I think that a lot of that anxiety is kind of overstated, at least when it comes to, the creative industries.
Yeah. I mean, change is never easy for anybody, but I agree. I mean, all that said, as far as how much potential there may be for things to change, in my experience, these tools aren't really ready to be used without a lot of human supervision. I'm not ready to start having an AI write books for me and without looking at them first. So, do you see this we're in this kind of initial stage, right? Where obviously AI has been around for decades, but in this generative space, I think, which is most of what we're talking about when dealing with creative, we're in the stage where there's a lot of experimentation and a lot of people trying a lot of things. Some of it works pretty well right out of the box, but always needs that human touch. Do you see that changing quickly as far as how much human supervision is actually needed? And where do you see opportunities to use these tools in safe ways?
I mean, I think that there's going to be a tremendous number of opportunities that continue to unfold, right? I mean, it's just like, we will always have people kind of pushing and exploring and playing. And then to your point, you're always going to have people finessing the final product.
Yeah.
The metaphor I always use is soup stock, right? When you make soup, the first, you know, phase is making the stock, which is just messy. You chop up an onion roughly, you throw it in some salty water with some, you know, carrots that you barely peel. And it's just, you would never drink that, you know? And that right. to me is what AI is for people, you know, all throughout the creative process. It's just the soup stock. It's the first draft. And then, I mean, we're using AI kind of throughout our company already. We don't really, you know, celebrate it because it's just kind of, you know, naturally folded into our way of doing business. And I think that that's what you're going to find. People are not, there's not going to be a revolution. There's just going to be, you know, a ton of incremental change and improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as you work at an agency and interface with a lot of different clients, what are you hearing from them about either how they're currently using or maybe their willingness to jump into using more AI?
I think that it's a mix. I think to a degree, people don't realize how much AI is already being used.
Yeah.
I think that there are obviously some liability issues that people are feeling cautious about when it comes to, you know, generating artwork and other processes. But, you know, with the exception of some, you know, the big holding companies kind of yelling and screaming that they're going to be there first, I think people are kind of, you know, moving forward prudently. So I, you know, clients are not very vocal about where it's going to be used and how it's going to be used, but I think they're definitely open to it. And, you know, I think they're looking to the agencies to take the lead in terms of bringing them, you know, these solutions, because these solutions are faster, you know, arguably, you know, better in terms of providing more opportunity for finesse and perfection, and cheaper, right? Because yeah. of that, the efficiencies that are built into them. So I think they're curious about it, but they're not pushing us. I've heard some stories of clients who want to turn a switch and make everything, you know, suddenly AI, but I think that they generally discover that they're going too fast, right? And they generally discover that what they're asking for is a lot of soup stock yeah. to be served, you know?
Yeah, yeah, agreed. I mean, I think there's a lot of potential for the starting points, or, you know, the soup stock, is, as you mentioned. I think that's a good analogy there.
Before we continue, I'd like to introduce you to a sponsor of the show, Partner Hero. Customer service outsourcing has long been available mainly to large enterprise businesses with long-term contracts and onerous procurement processes. Partner Hero is challenging business as usual and bringing the benefits of outsourcing to small and medium businesses as well as startups. With short, flexible contracts and fast ramp-up times, Partner Hero is making customer support outsourcing a viable option for small and medium businesses and startups. It's perfect for companies with seasonality expecting a temporary spike in volume or that simply need to scale up. And their focus on quality means your customers will get an experience that feels like it comes from your team. If you're ready to bring in outside customer support help for your company that feels like it's part of your existing team, check out Partner Hero. Head on over to partnerhero.com/agile, that's partnerhero.com/AGILE, to book a free consultation with their solutions team. Mention you heard about Partner Hero from the Agile brand and they'll waive the setup fee. Now let's get back to the show.
You know, you touched briefly on, there are some concerns with IP or, you know, or other things like that. And so, you know, there is reason to be a little cautious about how some of these things are used. It reminds me a little bit, that part of it, the regulation part of it, reminds me of early days of like the consumer data privacy stuff, where, you know, in Europe, GDPR was, I had several clients with, you know, large European customer bases, and there was regulations, but it was really hard to kind of understand exactly what the line was. And I think, you know, we're not even that far along here with AI or data privacy for that matter, but that's a different topic. But, you know, we're not that far along with AI regulation, let alone with some of the legalities of all that stuff. But, you know, that either including that or even that aside, you know, what should leaders of creative teams be doing now to prepare their teams as well as themselves as leaders for, you know, for a future where AI is going to be used more?
I mean, 50% of it, if not more, isn't going to come from leaders. It's going to come from the people in the company themselves looking for faster, better, cooler ways to get things done. You know, I mean, I think I have a number of copywriters who are using AI for their first drafts right now. I have a number of people in the studio who are using AI to, you know, resize photographs. And I mean, this is just kind of like, if you hire great people, they're going to find great tools and they're going to use them in great ways, right? So that's most of it. Most of it's just coming up through the ranks and the ambitious people working harder and trying to do better. The part that does come from leadership is, I think, that idea of encouraging people to discover, encouraging people to play, trying to find the right partnerships and putting out the red flags, right? Saying, let's be careful with this. We don't want to do something that might, you know, catch us unawares or leave us vulnerable in some way. So yeah. I think the cautions should largely come from leadership. And I think that the exploration, the adventurousness should come from the, you know, from the whole company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that kind of leads to I forget the exact stat right now, but I was reading some article, I think on Forbes, where, you know, a large percentage of employees that are using AI are not talking about it with their bosses or their managers and stuff like that. And so, you know, you mentioned, I like how you describe it, of like a lot of the ideas and a lot of the people playing around with this stuff, they are going to be maybe the more junior people or the people reporting up to a creative director, a manager, things like that. But how do you look at that relationship of, you know, there's a lot of ways of looking at transparency with AI. You know, we won't talk about the bias of AI and stuff like that, but more just how transparent should there be? Should that relationship of the creative teams using this stuff with their bosses, you know, so that there's not kind of this relationship where as long as AI has been used correctly, it's not disparaged that they're using it.
Yeah, I think, to a degree, I mean, I'm sure that going back to the, you know, licensing issues and the rights issues, you know, I think that there's a lot to be careful about there. But the majority of AI tools aren't being used in that way, right? I mean, again, if a copywriter needs to write a brochure and they want to use AI for their first draft, I think that's great. I think that if they try to turn it in as the final draft, it's going to, you know, look like what it is, which is kind of lame copywriting, you know?
Right.
I mean, the AI writes like kind of a stone teenager who didn't quite do the reading.
Right.
And so, you know, if you allow that to pass, you know, that quality is going to impact, you know, the agency and the client. So I think that, you know, it's going to become difficult to separate out where AI is showing up. It's sort of like, you know, the auto finish on in Gmail, right? I mean, you can't tell where Gmail suggested a phrase and the person took the suggestion. But a creative copywriter is never going to actually take the suggestion. They're going to see it and say, okay, that's the cliche way to end that sentence. I'm going to do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. In other words, quality is going to win out. And even if AI is a starting point, which I agree. I mean, I think that's the best way to look at it. And, you know, or things like grammar check or spell check or stuff like that, of course. But it does seem like the quality and the creativity will win out, and it'll be very clear to tell. Like, I can already read a blog post and know that it was generated by AI just by the introduction and the conclusion, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's a very flat voice. And that's the role of creativity from the get-go, right? That's been the role of creativity throughout civilization, is to stand out above the masses and to do something that differentiates and shines. And if AI is going to make the world a much noisier place, and you're suddenly going to be surrounded by all this blather. You know, it's just going to put that much more pressure on creatives to find the human voice, find the way that maybe people feel a connection, right? I mean, because that's what the challenge has always been.
Yeah, yeah. So then what is the creative team of the future look like? Are there going to be, you know, AI managers, and, you know, is there going to be AI on the creative team alongside humans, or, you know, how do you think about that?
I mean, I think it'll always be a tool. I mean, I don't think that it's going to be a peer-to-peer situation, at least not in the foreseeable future, right? I mean, I think that you're always going to want to have a higher, more human authority to connect with. I mean, it's just like, you know, automated responses on phone calls. There's always a point where you're desperately pushing zero, trying to talk to a human being, right? Because the nuances of your problem take a human solution, right?
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about those that are reluctant to adopt, the Luddites, so to speak, who may be refusing to utilize AI? Are they going to make it in the years ahead? Are they going to have to change their ways? You know, I'm sure there's some that are going to be just fine for a while, but, you know, what do you think about that? Like, is there going to be a tipping point where it is just the way everyone does it, or do you think there'll still be some holdouts?
I mean, there will always be holdouts. There are always going to be, you know, the Amish of the world.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Cormac McCarthy was still writing books on his typewriter when he passed away. Yeah. But it's not, you know, but they're just going to be, you know, these tools are just going to be folded in just like the personal computer and just like the internet was folded into people's lives. People will find a way to make it a megaphone for their own voices and for their own personalities and for their own, you know, unique perspectives, you know, just like the motion picture or the phonograph or any other tool that we've come up with.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, working at an agency, I ran one for a while before I sold it, and I know some of that dynamic there. You know, do you think that clients are going to ask for more out of the, you know, knowing that AI can speed things up and perhaps give more variations and stuff, you know, do you think that clients are going to be looking at this as a way to maybe get a little more for their dollars, or how do you think about that?
I mean, I think definitely there's going to be a big chunk of people who are going to be saying, you know, you can have AI do this basically for free. Please give it to me now. You know,
right.
And then there are going to be the clients who say, I'd like a blend. I'd like to know that the efficiencies are there and the savings are there, et cetera. But I still want a unique voice, right? Because, you know, in the end, a product that's made by AI is by definition soulless. And that's the biggest problem with advertising in general, right? I mean, it's, you know, it can often be formed by committee to the point where you don't.
Right.
See the voice or feel the humanity or feel the eye to eye connection with the brand. Whereas, you know, some lonely intern working at a cube gets handed the social media account and suddenly everyone feels the vibrancy of that brand. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, there are real people working here and they love it, you know? Yeah. So, you know, that kind of human breakthrough will, I think, always be happening, and people, you know, be charging a premium for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I guess speaking of the charging a premium, you know, how does this, a lot of agencies are charging by the hour, you know, hourly rates and stuff like that, even if there's some kind of retainer involved, like, how do you think that is going to factor into pricing? You know, if there's one person using a lot of AI, there's still a lot of work being done by that person, but, you know, how does this affect the pricing model?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think that it's going to take some time for that stuff to filter through. You're going to have it completely integrated within agencies and people understanding the efficiencies that it's creating and then moving back and forth. I mean, demands will be made. They're always going to be made to do things faster, do things for less money. But we're still in such a wild west. It's still so unknown. You can have AI write three paragraphs of copy and then spend just the same amount of time, you know, proofreading it.
Right.
I'm sure it didn't pull that out of some Soviet propaganda, you know, on the internet somewhere. So, you know, the efficiencies are going to be weird. I think, for a little while. But, you know, it'll catch up. At some point, the clients are going to figure it out and people will be billed properly for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Well, Toby, thanks so much for joining. I've got one last question before we wrap up here. So, you know, been talking about some of the current uses of AI, some of the future ones, but, you know, what's the next step for your agency, Lafayette American, in your relationship with AI, and how does this affect your strategy moving forward?
You know, I mean, we started 5 years ago, so we started right as, you know, there were a lot of innovations kind of taking off in terms of autonomous driving and EVs and, you know, just, you know, a lot of sustainable building materials. So we've been a little bit at the forefront of a lot of innovation. So people are kind of looking to us, and we just have to make sure that we're kind of handling it responsibly, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to overpromise. I really get mad when people are like, we're the AI agency, you know?
Right.
I think you have to be really prudent. And, you know, but we come from Detroit. We come from the, you know, the land of the assembly line. I mean, people look to Detroit, have looked to Detroit historically for innovation. And I think we want to be a part of that.
Yeah. Great. Well, again, I'd like to thank Toby Barlow, co-founder and creative chief at Lafayette American, for joining the show. You can learn more about Toby and Lafayette American by following the links in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to the Agile Brand with Greg Kilstrom podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe on your podcast channel of choice and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GREGKILSTROM.com. To get a copy of my latest book, House of the Customer, visit my website, or you can find it on Amazon or other retailers. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.